Hello, welcome to episode 269. We are all from China. I am.
So yeah, that's because from the show last night, yeah, we did the send-off for Dean Haglund going to Australia.
So I thought I'd do a horrible accent in honor of Dean Haglund, who's moving to Australia.
Yes.
That was a fun show last night.
It was. It was a really fun
show. Steve Benequist.
Chris Bono was on.
Yeah, Brooks Whelan, Rick Overton.
Yeah.
It was a good show.
In this little downtown dive bar.
In the corner of a dive bar.
Yeah, it wasn't even in the big part of the dive bar. Yeah, it was like in this corner.
It's weird wooden box chairs.
Yeah, no stage, nothing.
but gold microphone.
Yeah, a gold microphone, and I think Dean himself mounted the spotlight.
Yeah, a gold microphone like we were performing at the Wayne Newton Theater at the Stardust. Like, we all should have had diamond pinky rings that they had a specific light on that they shoot right there.
It was quite a show.
It was cool. So, Dean is moving in about, I don't know, 10 days, less than, something like that.
Yeah, next week, uh-huh.
He's moving to Sydney, so any Australian film nerd fans, rub your kitten hands along his luxurious face.
which is cool. He'll be doing some bullshit down in Australia.
He's going to be into some bullshit.
Yeah, he'll
be
signing something.
So when we the plan is, we don't have any finalized, we're working out right now, but obviously, as we've said, we want to screen Earbuds down there in Australia, Sydney, and hopefully maybe Melbourne and some other cities if we can. And Dean will hopefully be at some or all of those screenings with Q&A. So, you said it. We have now more film nerd writers in Australia than we do in New York City.
Yes.
Suck it, Big Apple. Yeah. We don't need your nonsense. We're going down under. So, let's introduce our guest.
Yeah, longtime comedy film nerds writer and also our go-to guy for the Turner Classic Movie Film Festival. And... He has a recurring role in a little TV show called Mad Men.
Little Mad Men TV program on the cable TV. I don't know if any of you have heard about it. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back, nerd, writer, and guest, Alan Havey.
Thank you, guys. Thank you, everybody. Great to be here in the garage. You know, Graham, I don't know why you got out of acting, but that accent, man, I felt I was on the outback. I felt I was battling Russell, whatever the hell that actor's name
Russell
is.
Russell Crowe, yeah.
Yeah, Russell Crowe. What happened to that movie?
Yeah, it was in The Great Wall of the Outback. That's where you brought me.
The Great Wall of the Outback. Hello, I'm a dingo wrangler, I am.
Wow, there's a kangaroo in the room.
Yeah, it's amazing. It is amazing.
By the way, have you been to Australia?
Yes.
I've been to Melbourne and Sydney and Cairns. It's wonderful.
They're great. It's great. A great country. I mean, honestly.
Lovely people.
I've been to, we were in Sydney last summer for the film, and then we were in the Outback interviewing a fan, Russell.
Yeah. In Newman.
Newman, Arizona.
Yeah.
No. It's close. Newman, Arizona has
one of the
more...
greatest states, entirely surrounded by water, Arizona. At one time, a penal colony.
Yeah, so we were in Newman, Arizona. I've been to Melbourne and Adelaide. I love those cities. I want to see more. Didn't really get to Perth. We just flew through it.
Right.
I want to see Perth, and I want to go up north to Brisbane and the Gold Coast. I want to see that.
Yes.
So much more Australia.
You want to surf there, too.
Damn right. That's the only reason. That's the main reason.
I did go scuba diving in the Great Barrier Reef.
Oh, really?
Really?
Yeah.
How was that?
It was great. It was fantastic.
Did you see stuff? Did stuff come up to you?
I just kind of closed my eyes and just kind of went through the water, but I felt buoyant.
Like crazy, like sea creatures that you wouldn't normally see?
No, but it's interesting. Nothing was like crazy, but there was a bull shark just hanging around there. And the guy said, don't worry about it. His name is Henry. You know how they are, the Australians.
Yeah,
don't worry about Henry.
Yeah.
That was a horrible Australian. No. I bet you there's more felons in Arizona than there are in the whole country of Australia.
I would, second that for sure.
Even if you count it in the 1800s, I'm sure that's still
Arizona's
true.
Arizona's always had more. I went to college there, so I got out.
You went to college?
University of Arizona, Tucson.
Oh, I was thinking Australia.
No, he went to the penal colony
in
Arizona.
Is that what they are?
No, it's Arizona State.
Everyone always says that.
Okay, sorry. Everyone always goes, you went to Arizona State? No, I went to University of Arizona.
What were there?
The Wildcats.
The Wildcats.
The prisoners.
Yeah. The Wildcat convicts.
Well, we got to get started. We got to talk about Mad Max. And also, we've been many tweets and emails. Are you guys going to do a spoiler ep? Yes, we are. Yes. And we are not going to announce the guest in case he doesn't show.
But we are recording that later today, and we'll release it this week.
Yeah, regardless of whether he shows up
or not. Whether we have a guest or not, we are going to do a Mad Max spoiler.
You mean guests don't show up?
That happens.
Isn't that crazy?
Well, that's wrong.
It is wrong.
We agree.
It is. If you have a guest, and you know, especially this thing, it's not like you're here all day,
right?
Doing a podcast.
It's an hour.
That is wrong.
It's totally wrong, yeah. Alan. They call with crazy things, and can I reschedule to May? They do all kinds of crazy things.
Oh, wait a minute. I just thought it would be more interesting after the end of Mad Men
to have
this podcast.
You're very okay? It's a good call. It's a good call.
And I'm coming at 11 out of 3.
Yeah.
Apparently you guys don't drive.
So, Mad Max Fury Road. Dear Lord, this movie
I liked it.
Was a long time in the making. I enjoyed it very much, and as soon as that movie started, it was like adrenaline being poured into your eyes for an hour and a half. It was really, really amazing.
I think, like I said, going into it, I was skeptical of if it's just going to be too much useless action.
Right.
And how are they going to tell a story in all this action?
Right.
They told it brilliantly, I thought. I thought, like, they used there was so much nonverbal acting in that movie that I thought was amazing between Tom Hardy and Charlize Theron.
Yes.
And they did, you know, his kind of crazy PTSD flashbacky things were also very informative.
Yeah, absolutely. It was one of the things that I will say about this film is you're either going to be on board at the beginning or you're not. This isn't the kind of movie that's going to change your mind halfway through. Like, it's the kind of movie where you know what you're getting into. It's a Mad Max movie. You're already either on board or you're not. And you can watch this movie and you kind of know what to expect. Not completely, you don't know what to expect. Mm-hmm. But if you don't know who Mad Max is and you're, like, not on board in the first 10, 15 minutes of the movie, there's nothing that follows that is going to change your mind.
Right.
It really is. It is what it is. And I will say one of the things is that it sets up the character of Mad Max beautifully. Like, this isn't a reboot. It's not a remake. It's literally a continuation of the stories with another actor. Because the way they flashed back, and they give, like, little Easter eggs to the older films, mm-hmm. and, you know, in the first movie, he's a cop. But you would, if you just watch this movie without knowing the backstory, you would, there's no way you
right.
would.
Well, and he mentions it in the voiceover. He
mentions it in the voiceover, exactly. Like, literally, the first voiceover sets up the last three movies, pretty much. And then you're off to the races. That's it.
And they, I mean, George Miller's called this a reimagining, so it's kind of not, it's not a sequel of any kind, nor is it a prequel. He's sort of just reimagining it a little bit.
It felt like a sequel to me. It really felt like timeline-wise. I'm not sure. I would have to.
That's what he called it, though.
Yeah. Okay.
That's what he's calling it. So mm-hmm. it is sort of a reimagining, but it did feel like. But I liked it, and man, it's really Charlize Theron's film.
Yeah, and that's, I will say, if there's one complaint that I did have about that movie is that there wasn't enough Mad Max in
right.
it. Like he spends.
Real quick, folks, you're listening to is Chris is getting some work done on his
yes.
house.
So you might hear some faint buzzing or banging every once in a while.
There's nothing we can do about it.
I'm just going to plug my ears. Spoiler alert. Seeing the movie tomorrow.
Yeah.
So
don't worry. We won't spoil any of it.
We won't.
And this is anything that we talk about happens literally in the beginning of the film. Like you would say, as far as Mad Max goes, like, I wanted to see more of him in the movie, actually. Mm-hmm. And I thought Tom Hardy was a great choice. Like, I wanted to see just, we'll get more into it in the spoiler app, but I mean, that's kind of a sign of how much I enjoyed it, is, like, I just wanted to see more of certain things. Now, one of the things that blew me away was the use of practical effects. You just don't see this anymore. Mm-hmm. You see actual cars crashing, cars exploding. I mean, this
that
movie, they could have
amazing.
Easily, this could have been 300-ed. 300-ed.
300-ified, yeah.
300-ified, where, you know, you've got all these actors on, like, you know, green screens and, you know, half shell cars and whatever. Mm-hmm. And then you just CG all the other cars in the background. But no, and here's the thing about it. It made it feel so much more visceral and real.
Yeah.
When you see the actual vehicles and the crashing, and they were even saying, like, the stuntmen, like, you know, when they're you see all this in the trailer, they're on the poles moving back and forth. They're doing all of that. There's not, you know, there's not a green screen pole or anything. It was really, really cool, and it just felt like that's how this movie needed to be.
Like, I was trying to figure, I was like, God, how did they shoot this?
Yeah, that was, that went through my mind a couple of times, like, how did they shoot this? And
I felt that way about The Road Warrior.
Right.
Too. Mm-hmm. I mean, what, 30 years ago?
Yeah.
Right.
Well, exactly. Like, that movie...
George Miller's 70 years old. I mean, and he put this movie together. Granted, it was been in development for a while, but he put this together, and he just kept the essence of it. 30 years later, it was
as a kid, I saw Road Warrior first, and was like... And then, like, saw Mad Max on VHS or something, was like, oh, wow.
I don't think Mad Max came here.
Exactly.
You know, for Americans, our first intro to this was Road Warrior.
Was the Road Warrior. And then we had to go seek out the original film. Right. Eventually, it did come. When Road Warrior was big, they re-released.
But the first time I saw Mad Max was on VHS.
Yeah,
me too.
And Same Road here. Warrior was got a wide release because Mel Gibson had already sort of blown up at that point.
Right, right.
Mad Max, he was nobody.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what I was like, wow, this is amazing. This is an amazing, crazy world.
And I'm going to read you a piece of trivia that kind of tells how he and why George Miller, Miller made this movie. I read this on Wikipedia and I had to share it with everybody. George Miller was a medical doctor in Sydney, Australia, working in a hospital emergency room where he saw many injuries and deaths of the types depicted in the film. Oof. He also witnessed many car accidents growing up in rural Queensland and had, as a teenager, lost at least 3 friends in accidents.
God.
Wow. So you see how art, you know, comes from real life. It's when I read that, I'm like, oh my God. Yeah, what must have been going through his head when he was making these movies.
So if you're having a tough day, if your girlfriend broke up with you, deal with it.
Yeah.
Make a film. This guy was a doctor. He went to med school.
Yeah. He was working at an ER.
Yeah.
He wasn't shooting with his iPhone.
Yeah, he wasn't whining because he didn't get something. Something didn't download on his phone.
Every once in a while watching this movie, Graham, did you feel like, oh, that's what the future is going to look like? There was a couple times where, like, yep, it's going to be cars. We're going to be fighting over water, and there's going to be
oil and guns,
and there's going to be giant. There's going to be obese mayors with giant feet.
I got to tell you, when I watch a movie that I think, like, if they do too much action or it's just action just for action's sake, I start to tune out and I get bored
because it becomes. You don't care, and it literally becomes repetitive.
It's
like watching a Michael Bay movie.
Exactly.
How many times can you watch a building blow up?
I was like, my body was physically tense for most of this movie because I was so engaged in it and was like, wow. So,
did you see it in 3D?
No, and I wish I would have. I'll tell you that right now. I've talked many times in the show. I'm not a big 3D guy. I saw the Age of Ultron, the Avengers movie in 3D, and was like, wow. I saw it in IMAX 3D at the Chinese. I saw this movie, was in the back row. I wish the screen would have been bigger. And afterwards I went, man, maybe I should have seen this.
Seen this one in 3D.
In IMAX 3D. Like, I think, like, it might be worth that extra money. And I don't say that often. So.
I think I'm going to be seeing this one again on the big screen.
I got to see it again.
Yeah.
Because there's just too many story things and analogies and all this stuff that he's putting in there and what this is. I mean, he's basically, we'll get into this in the spoiler.
Yes. But it's big, crazy action. And one of the also,
what he's saying, and I won't say it now, I'll say it in the spoiler, but what he's saying about our current society, man.
There's some commentary there for sure. But there's commentary in every movie.
Right.
Every Mad Max movie.
Right. Even the Thunderdome ones.
Even, you know what? It just doesn't quite work
it's
in
bad.
That one.
It's
yeah.
bad commentary. It's useless commentary.
Yeah, yeah. One of the things I loved, one of the stars of this film was the production design. It's absolutely incredible. Because not only are these weird kind of post-apocalyptic tricked out cars, you also have these different almost clans of like different societies, and each one that's different, they have like their own town and what they do, but they also, all the car styles are different,
right?
Like they do different things to each car, and it's unbelievably meticulous detail to each thing. It's like, this is like the motorcycle guys, and this is the, you know, the cars that these are the weapons that they use. And it all feels like, oh, well, that's what they would do. These are the weapons that would happen. And when society collapses, this is what people would be using.
Yeah.
And the fact that, you
Who
know,
wrote
you
it?
See. it was George Miller with, I think, one or two other people. And this is what I loved about the authenticity of it. It wasn't another filmmaker coming over, taking over the reins of Mad Max. This is the same guy who did it, you know, many years ago. Well, I mean, the first Mad Max, 30, 40 years ago.
Yeah, it was written by George Miller, Brendan McCarthy, and the final credit is Nick Lathurus. Yeah. Those are the three guys that wrote it.
So,
at 70 years old, where do you see your guys? Where do you see yourselves? I'm on a porch somewhere.
Yeah, not in Australia and South Africa making this giant movie. I don't know, man. I'm like...
in the middle of the desert.
I'm auditioning for Grandpa.
Yeah.
You know, that's what I'm... or Great-Grandpa.
Yeah. I'm buying a new smoothie blender on Amazon.
And that's injecting what I can,
but it's
right
going to be a real
arm.
Cool one, man.
Nice one. I can easy...
I can see that. I can see, you know, trip to Hawaii. That's
what I'm going to be doing. Yeah, yeah. This was impressive. So, yeah, I recommend this film. And we've gotten a lot of great comments on the message board. And we'll read more of those. And again, we'll do the spoiler rep. So,
absolutely.
Curious to know, Alan, when you said you're going to see it this week, what you think about it after it comes out?
I'll send you an email.
Yeah, definitely want to know what you think.
Because I had a friend who walked out.
Right.
Because he said, as opposed to your point of view, mm-hmm. It just, he couldn't watch anymore. It was just climax after climax mm-hmm. after climax. And I understand that. And this guy's pretty picky. Mm-hmm. But he has a fatigue syndrome. And he rarely goes out of the house to see a movie. And he really wanted to see this movie. Because he loved The Road Warrior,
mm-hmm.
Thunderdome, and Mad Max, you know.
And I can see that point of view
absolutely.
With this type of movie. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. That's
Yeah, that doesn't shock me. Anybody saying, oh, it was just too much, I'd go.
They're going to have the same complaint. Anyone that doesn't like this movie, the complaint's going to be exactly the same. It's there's not enough story. It's too much. It's too much action. And mm-hmm. that's like, I couldn't get into it.
But I'm going to see it in 3D.
Nice.
Tomorrow. Yeah. So.
All right, next movie is I Am Big Bird, the Carol Spinney story.
All right, you finally saw this.
Yeah, I did. I was really excited to see this because I'm fascinated by the fact that, again, another man who's been doing this since 1969 when Sesame mm-hmm. Street started, it's the same guy doing Big Bird and Oscar the Grouch still.
You don't give up a gig in this business.
Yeah.
No, you don't, especially if they don't see your face.
Never give that gig up.
No.
And
he's 78.
78.
What?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And it
sounds like I'll still be podcasting.
Yeah.
I can see us still in the garage at 70.
No, we got to have an office. Come on.
I'll tell you guys.
No, we've bought the block.
Oh, okay.
And,
fine.
It's like George Romero. I know guys in this business who are in their 70s, 80s. Mm-hmm. They still want to work.
Yes. Yeah,
they still, mm-hmm. you don't lose it. Now, some guys don't. Like Don Adams from Get Smart. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. When he retired. He got out of the business.
Flip Wilson did the same thing. He just made his money and went...
And some artists, they can't. It's like, well, I'm making art. I can't stop until I'm dead. And that's I see that as well.
Hopefully when I'm 70, I'm leading some sort of post-apocalyptic war.
No, you
people.
Don't want
yeah,
that.
Yeah, come on.
At 70, maybe now.
Yeah.
You're not going to have the energy.
Yeah.
You don't want that.
At 70, you're going to be the one left behind when they go on scavenging food runs.
Ah, you're right.
You're going to be in an ice flow.
Yeah.
If there is water, you're going to be in an ice flow. Come on, Grandpa Graham. Here you go.
He's going to push me out.
Yes. Bye-bye.
You guard the Citadel while we all go out.
We don't have enough food for you, Graham.
Try and keep up. So this movie...
Grandpa. That's what it'll be.
I know. I've heard that since I was a kid.
Really?
Grandma, grandpa, mm-hmm. Graham cracker.
Wow. Well, Graham
s'mores.
Cracker, I would expect.
We get them all. Mm-hmm. What's your brother? And then there's what's your brother's name? Meter? Ha ha. It's a metric Ooh. Joke. Yeah. Mm-hmm. 80s road comics. Graham, I got Grandma Coke. Yeah, I know. Everything's drugs.
I never said that to you.
No, you didn't. God bless you, Alan. That's why you're still here today.
Wow. I knew it was
that
something.
That was the litmus test. So I saw this movie, and I'm watching this movie, and the reason it's a good watch is because of the subject matter. I mean, Carol Spinney is amazing to watch, and he's really compelling. The problem is the documentary is made actually very poorly. Like, it was partially crowdfunded. The documentarians...
Uh-oh.
Yeah. And it could have really used a little more money and a little more experience on the other side with the filmmakers, because the filmmakers didn't understand what was important and what wasn't when they were putting this film together. Mm-hmm. There's one pivotal scene. This is not a spoiler. You know he's still doing Big Bird.
Right.
On Sesame Street. One of the plans, NASA had called him at one point and wanted him to go on the space shuttle and to kind of get all of the kids involved in science, and that was one of the things. It was a big promotional mm-hmm. thing. And it turns out, you know, they couldn't get the costume on the space shuttle. It wouldn't work. And
Wait, NASA wanted Big Bird?
Yes.
On the space shuttle?
Yes.
Wow.
That's huge. And that's the space shuttle.
And that's a spoiler alert, so yeah. Go ahead.
And that's the shuttle that blew up. So that was the one that with the teacher
right.
on.
Yes.
Oh. Uh-huh. And the way that it's handled is there's this big buildup to like, yeah, they asked me to go and all this stuff. And then when they show the footage of the Challenger blowing up, there's no follow-up interviews. Wouldn't you think that's kind of, we would want you to comment on that. How do you feel about that? Like, there's all these missed opportunities in this documentary that are a little frustrating. But the thing that actually saves it is, of course, the subject matter. It's huge nostalgia. Anybody who grew up on Sesame Street watching Big Bird and Oscar, and it's fantastic to see it for that perspective. But then there's also places like that, again, the filmmakers drop the ball, where they go through, Sesame Street went through a change. Characters like Big Bird and Oscar were the stars of the show, but then the demographic changed and the producers decided, well, no, we're going to have, instead of like 5 and 6 year olds watch, when it was kind of, remember when it first started, it was kind of hip, like a Saturday Night sure. Live type sketches but for kids. The focus became on Elmo and then the younger characters, and then the demographic of the show was 2 and 3 year olds. So they didn't get into like why that happened, you know, how that left, you know, the older characters like, you know, Big Bird and Oscar. And that was like, well, no, that's fascinating. Like, what caused a change in the whole content of Sesame Street? And it was completely ignored, and like they mentioned,
youth culture.
It, mentioned,
yeah. 2 and 3. We're going to 2 and 3. Yeah. They're the market now.
They have more disposable income.
Yeah.
So it's definitely worth seeing for a nostalgia point of view, and to actually watch Carol Spinney. But the filmmaking makes it kind of bland and lifeless, which is a shame because this type of subject matter deserves,
sure.
you know, a little bit better treatment. But it's still worth a watch. You definitely want to check it out.
All right. Well, let's get into. Let's get into the TCM Festival.
Yes, yes. Now, Alan, you go every year,
every
please.
Year.
How was this year different? What'd you see?
The only thing different this year was Robert Osborne wasn't there. He had a minor medical procedure, but because I guess he's 82, mm-hmm. the doctor wanted to do it now. So it was just bad timing. He's fine. He's in the pink. He feels good. So that was the only disappointment.
So we're only going to be talking about people 70 or older on this show.
Yeah. But Ben Mankiewicz and Ileana Douglas, Scott McGee, Leonard Maltin did double duty. You know?
Oh, great.
Yeah, because this was kind of almost the last-minute thing. Mm. And it was fantastic. It is every year. You have a great choice of films to talk to. I guess the highlight for me was Christopher Plummer being interviewed by Leonard Maltin before The Man Who Would Be King.
Oh, man. Oh,
wow. And he told some great stories involving Sean Connery and Michael Caine. This guy's really articulate and a smart guy, Christopher Plummer.
Christopher Plummer is a guy I could listen to tell stories about his old theater days.
And you know,
he's
got millions of them.
He did a one-man show about the literature he grew up on over mm-hmm. the years, and it was an hour and 20 minutes. I guess he's 82. I think he sat down 2 minutes and had one sip of water during the whole time.
Wow.
It was fascinating. He's down in L.A. So I knew he was a good storyteller, but it's one of my favorite films. And that's what you get when you go here. You not only see the movie, and sometimes people did spoil stuff at the beginning. The crowd went, ooh, and someone said, oh, you've seen it before. No, like that. Like, so there were a couple times people did kind of screw up. They didn't give away the ending
right,
or anything.
Right.
But you get to hear people talk about movies, and they're as passionate or more passionate than you are.
Right.
And there is that community feeling when you're going to this. And time stops. Because you've seen, first year I saw 5 movies a day. This year I averaged like 3.5. You know, because I had other things to do.
Right.
And I had an audition like early Monday, or I had to work uh-huh. early Monday, so I missed Sunday night, which I wanted to see. Excuse me. I want to see Kiss Me, Kate on the big screen because it's one of those musicals as it was at the Chinese. But, I just love the turn. It's like Christmas to me.
Yeah.
And fortunately, I've never been booked in a club or gotten acting work during the Turner Classic Movie Film Fest. If I had to miss that, I would be seriously bummed.
Right. You know? I mean, I'm looking at you. You brought scheduling, like you brought the program, and at the back is the schedule grid. And I'm just looking at this, and it's just like
it's huge. And Neil was saying, like, he was there the whole time, and he never saw you. And looking at this grid, I'm like, oh, like you said, you could have five people there, never see each other.
It's amazing. You've got, I mean, there's Norma Rae, An Affair to Remember, The Cincinnati Kid.
I saw The Cincinnati Kid, and Anne Margaret came out.
Really?
And talked about it.
What was that like?
It was really interesting. She talked about she's a motorcycle freak.
And, oh, really?
Yeah, she would ride her motorcycle like a Mulholland Drive going 120 miles an hour.
No way.
Yeah, that's what Ben Mankiewicz said when he interviewed her. And, you know, she talked about Steve McQueen. The only thing
just for people out there, The Cincinnati Kid came out in 65, directed by Norman Jewison, starring Steve McQueen and Anne Margaret and Edward G. Robinson.
And Carl Malden.
This is...
Oh. And Rip Torn. You know, have you see these actors, you know, in the zone... Way before,
mm-hmm.
you know,
and these are marked with like a discussion, like so that tells you the people from the film are going to be there,
right? I saw Patton on the big screen.
Oh,
I hadn't seen it since it first came out. My dad took me to see it, 1970. We went together,
mm-hmm.
and Ron Perlman, the actor, came out and just introduced it. There was no discussion. Of course, all the principals are gone. But that was good. And Ron Perlman, it was very short, but it was very succinct, and you could tell he just loved this movie.
Mm.
And he says his career of his highlight, the career highlight. And you look at Ron Perlman. You look IMDb him. He's been
in many, many things.
Ton of things, starting with, I think, Quest for Fire. And just having a great career. He said being a guest programmer on TCM is the highlight of his career.
Really?
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I think Robert Osborne is probably the most beloved man in Hollywood.
Right.
Yeah, because everybody, all ages, actors, writers, technicians, anyone that has anything to do with film loves Turner Classic Movies.
Right. You know? So what are some of the other highlights that, like, from the festival or interviews or anything like that that really stood out to you?
Well, I went to see The Loved One.
Mm-hmm.
And with Robert Morse, and I got there and it was jammed, and the first row was open. So I said, "Fine, I'll sit down."
1965, right?
Yeah, Jonathan Winters, a really interesting, dark comedy. And Ben Mankiewicz came down to the front row, and he's ready to interview Robert Morse. And I turn around, Robert Morse sees me, and he knows me from Mad Men. So we hugged. Hey, how you mm-hmm. doing? And then, you know, had a great interview with Robert Morse. And Ben Mankiewicz, nice guy. I'd never met him before. Watched him for years. Mm-hmm. And then before they started the movie...
Robert Morse is the guy who plays Burt Cooper on Mad Men, so everyone can put that together.
Right, right.
And I've known him since I was a kid. I saw him in A Guide for the Married Man, and he on Broadway, and How to Succeed in Business, won a Tony for True. A great career. And he goes, come with me. And I went up and I sat in his guest seat with him and watched him in the movie. Now, this is the first time.
Oh, that's really cool.
I just got chills, man.
I ever sat next to an actor watching his old film, you know. And every now and then, turn to him and goes, this scene, we were cracking up. He goes, watch this. I came up with this bit. And he goes, oh, Tony Richardson, he came up. He would like lean.
You got your own DVD commentary while watching the
exactly.
movie.
And usually I don't want to talk to anybody when
I'm watching. Of course not.
But what am I going to say? You know, it's like, come on, give me the
Bob,
info.
Quiet.
Yeah.
I'm trying to watch this movie.
I'm trying
you're
to
in.
Watch you. Yeah. I can't hear you. You're talking. So that was such a thrill. And then he watched about three quarters of it. He goes, I got to go. Great to see you. You know, and then walked out. You know, so that was, for me personally,
wow, that's really cool.
That's like, festival. I mean, literally, I just got chills on how cool that would be.
Rafifi was probably the best film at the festival. The great caper film, Jules Dassin was in it and directed it. This is a must-see for any comedy film nerd out there. Or it's also pronounced Rififi. Mm-hmm. You know, look it up. It is fantastic. Great film.
When did that come out?
I think it came out in 55. And that was great. And A Man for All Seasons was opposite that. So that was a really tough decision because I love that movie. But I've seen it before. I'd seen Rafifi, I think, once on television. And I wanted to see it on the big screen.
Now, I noticed, too, they actually – have they always done this where they've added some more recent films – like
I see Malcolm X, like they're starting to bring movies in from the 90s.
20 years old.
Still 20 years old.
Like, yeah, like Out of Sight 1998. Like
did they have a definitive cutoff for a classic? Has it got to be?
I don't know about that. They
probably do. Around 20 years though.
Yeah, I would say at least 20 years. It's you know, talk about feeling old. I watch TCM now and I go, yeah, I saw this when I was an adult.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I know.
Like, I'm looking at, like, Raiders of the Lost Ark. Yeah, I saw that in the theater.
Right.
You know?
But there's a whole generation.
That hasn't.
And
that's unbelievable to us.
Right.
You know?
Well, that's the thing we say every year when we talk about this, and it bears repeating, which is, if this is new to you, watch it.
Yeah.
It's amazing. You know what I mean? And if you get to see it on a big screen, all the more because...
You know, take advantage of living in L.A.
Exactly. Like, this is one of those things that you're only going to really get in L.A.
Or you can take the cruise.
Right.
Be in a boat. But that's it. I talked to the guys. Have you ever thought of having another one in New York? Yeah, we've talked about it, but it's a big undertaking.
Right.
You know?
Well, this is a crazy amount of work, I would imagine.
Yeah. And they're headquartered at the Roosevelt Hotel, where they held the first Oscars. The theaters are all within walking distance.
Mm-hmm.
There are people from many different countries, all over the United States. I think maybe one state wasn't, you know, I mean, I'm talking about the people that go.
Right.
So there's a lot of film buffs out there. And Lauren Bacall says, if you haven't seen it, it's not an old movie.
No, it's not.
Right. You know?
And then especially, I'm assuming a lot of these, they're 35 millimeter prints.
Yeah.
So you're seeing the way the movie was shot,
the way it was projected,
the way the shots were composed, the way they were lit, and all that stuff. And that's, we kind of take that for granted in this digital get it all now age, but that's the art of filmmaking
and
cinematography.
New filmmakers don't realize. Yeah, they don't realize that they didn't see this until the film was developed.
Right.
You know, it's not like that, oh, I could just look at the monitor, I know exactly what I shot. No, there was no playback.
Mm-mm.
You know, when you're shooting on film.
And if
film,
a reel didn't come out, which happened, you know, like if it's something got damaged or something in the processing and the development, then that, guess what? That reel's gone.
Yeah.
You know, and that's like, wow. It was such a cool thing. And then you would get it back from the developer and go, okay. and then put these films together, which is why they're all the more amazing when you get to see them on the big screen.
Now, it's in the Man Chinese. It's the big theater, the satellite theaters, but then it's also at the Egyptian. Were there any other theaters too?
Yeah, all the mini theaters next to the Man.
Oh, yeah, right. Mm-hmm. That are upstairs.
Yes, the Egyptian. Mm-hmm. I think one year they went to the Dome.
Oh,
2001.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
And El Capitan, I think they showed the original Sleeping Beauty.
And Pinocchio, I saw, was on there.
Pinocchio, that's what it was, yeah. And I hadn't seen Pinocchio since I was a kid, but, you know, I wanted to see movies I really hadn't seen before.
Sure.
You know, like My Man Godfrey.
Right.
I had seen that on television, never saw it on the big screen. So I passed up Breaker Morant to see that.
Oh, yeah.
And I saw Breaker Morant a couple times on the big screen when it first came out. I just moved to New York. And I love that film.
That's a great film. We were talking about that earlier when we were talking about the Water Diviner movie, which is that Russell Crowe movie about the Battle of Gallipoli, and where the movie Gallipoli and Breaker Morant, which are, man, I saw Breaker Morant in the theater as a kid. These movies, like Malcolm X, I would recommend seeing on the big screen because it's Spike Lee's
masterpiece.
It is his masterpiece, and the process of getting that movie made, he had to deal with the Nation of Islam and and Malcolm X's wife and family. To, you know, he had to get that story completely accurate. And if you read the Malcolm X biography that Alvin Haley helped write, Alex Haley helped write it. That's an amazing film. It's an amazing, and there's all these great actors in it who later became bigger stars and stuff like that. Malcolm X is a phenomenal movie.
Yeah,
it's a phenomenal movie.
And I wanted to revisit it.
Yeah,
but I didn't have the time because I had just come out of The Man Who Would Be King. I was kind of,
and this is like how great the festival is. Like Malcolm X is playing against Rebel Without a Cause. I mean, you know, he had all these amazing movies that you could see.
Great competition for Spike Lee.
Yeah, and Rebel Without a Cause is actually playing at the Aereo near us in Santa Monica.
Like, oh, right
this
now
this weekend. I
oh,
think.
Cool.
Yeah.
That's a great movie.
Ian Wolfe, who plays the guy in the planetarium up there, I worked with him years ago, and I was, because he's been in a ton of movies. So I was, when we weren't shooting, I'd worked with him in like 87 mm-hmm. on a movie called Checking Out. He talked to me about Rebel Without a Cause, and the, you know, they did the setup where they shot James Dean.
Right.
And he gave his dialogue, and then they turned the cameras around to focus on Ian Wolfe, and James Dean started to leave. And Ian Wolfe said, "Where are you going?" He said, "Oh, I already did my close-ups. You can do it with the script girl." And Ian Wolfe said, "No, I need you here. I need to look into your eyes. So you've got to do it again." "Yeah, but I'm not on camera." "It doesn't matter. I need you." And James said, "Oh, okay," and sat down and did it. Because in those days, or in a lot of times, stars will get up and walk.
Yeah.
You know, right. The scene in the back of the taxi cab, the great scene in On the Waterfront, you know, Rod Steiger was talking to the script girl, which makes his performance even more amazing.
Right.
You know,
right.
Brando shot mm-hmm. his part. Am I done? I'm out of here. I'm going to go play the bongos or whatever.
Right. Yeah.
So if you watch Ian Wolfe in Rebel Without a Cause, know that James Dean is
actually there.
Yeah. Which it's wasn't amazing. Always the case.
I remember, too, like when you see, when you catch up on these things and sometimes in the wrong order, like I remember watching Rebel Without a Cause going, "Is that Mr. Howell from Gilligan's Island?"
Yeah.
And you don't realize sometimes when you watch sometimes someone being goofy on a sitcom, like, no, they were actually dramatic actors that made, you know.
Yeah, they took the sitcom gig to pay the bills.
Yeah,
because
yeah exactly.
They still need to work.
Yeah, they still need to work.
That movie didn't keep them going.
Yeah, yeah exactly.
Actors still need to work all the time. Yeah. Sean Penn, when he was on Friends, said he did it for the money.
Yeah.
He needed the money.
Wow. One performance doesn't fund your life. Yes.
No.
So
One sitcom can.
Mm-hmm.
A nice run, but a movie.
That's why those actors like Alan Alda and people like from those giant shows, just mm-hmm. some of them went, I don't need to work again. Loretta Swift from MASH was like,
And, you know, but Alan Alda did work
right.
again. But he can mm-hmm. pick and choose his projects.
Right, but yeah, he's right. very specific. Mm-hmm. Like, he's like, I only want to do this really interesting thing here, mm-hmm. or this Woody Allen movie, or be on mm-hmm. West Wing, or something like that.
You know, you can do... you know, Rebel Without a Cause and Gilligan's Island and Mr. Magoo. You know, you can do yeah. all these things together.
You have the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, let's get into that now.
Growing up in the 60s, you know, I would watch Fred McMurray in My Three Sons.
Mm-hmm.
And then he was in the Caine Mutiny playing a total dick.
Oh, yeah.
And then Double Indemnity. So and then The Apartment. So you realize, well, this guy has a lot of range.
Fred McMurray started as a film noir guy. I mean, that was like his thing. Yeah. He was this dark, brooding, tall actor that was always like mean sometimes, and then became the nice dad. Like,
well, after The Apartment, he got so many fan letters saying, "I don't like to see you like this."
And really?
That's when he went to Disney. And did Son of Flubber and all those, and Chip and My Three Sons.
Wow.
Because his character was so despicable in The Apartment, which also played this year mm-hmm. at the Turner Classic Movies. But I went to see Viva Zapata because I wanted to see Brando on the big screen. I hadn't seen the movie, so that was...
How is the Viva Zapata?
It's good.
Yeah?
It holds up.
Wow.
I mean, you know, some of it's a little corny and stuff like that, but it's interesting to see Brando play a Latino.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the eye makeup, you can tell it's a little heavy
yeah.
and stuff like that. But it's a very emotional film, very interesting.
Oh, that's fascinating.
You know, it's a touch of evil makeup kind of thing.
Well, I remember reading Carl Malden's book. I think it's called When Do I Start? And he talks about working with Brando, and he talks about that same thing of like when, you know, they came to him with Streets of San Francisco. He was like, you know, he had won an Oscar, I think, for On the Waterfront.
Yeah.
And he was like, a cop show, there's a crime, and it's wrapped up in a nice, neat bow at the end of every week. You know, I'm an Academy Award winning, okay. And he was like...
Do you think he said that?
Well,
I'm an Academy Award winning...
He said in the book, he was literally like, I won an Oscar, I've done Broadway.
Right.
And now I got to do this cop TV show. And then he said, but he goes, I did the thing, what were you just saying? I got to work. He just said, you know what, I'm going to take the gig, and when do I start? And he said, you know, it was an amazing experience because all that I got recognized, I had never been recognized as much as when I started doing Streets of San Francisco.
And then the American Express commercials.
Exactly.
Yeah.
He right. said,
open up that door.
Those two things got me recognized all the time. And he goes, as an actor, it was great to just know I got work. I got steady gigs. I got residual checks coming in. He goes, it was just the I didn't have to know, am I going to get this picture? Am I not going to get this picture? He loved it.
Yeah, actors don't assume they're always going to get the part. Any movie you see with a star, there's probably three or four people
of course.
That were considered for that.
Right. Yeah, you know. And they knew. And maybe they had to do a screen test, or they had to, you know, those lunches with the director are like, that's the audition.
Yeah, yeah.
Half the time the director's like, are you going to be a pain in the ass to deal with this? Especially if you're some actor that has a reputation or whatever. But I want to get into this since we're talking about TV. So now,
yeah, today actors will take any part on television.
Oh yeah,
you know, I mean, if you look at Fargo, you look at Mad Men, Breaking Bad. I mean, top actors will kill to get on a good show because they know it's hot now.
Well, the prestige has gone up for television.
Oh God,
the hour episodic now is like it's in a golden,
it's like a mini movie now.
It's a golden era, man.
Right.
And something like Fargo, some of the episodes were an hour and 20 minutes.
Yeah, right. Yeah, they were longer.
You could do on FX. Mm-hmm. You can't do that on network.
No,
you can't.
CBS won't let you do that.
No, you won't. And the Netflix shows or whatever, they're just like.
Now, I think the networks are slowly starting to catch up, though. Like one of the that new David Duchovny show that's coming out about Manson. They're saying on demand, all the episodes are going to be available, which a network has never done that before. It's because of
binge
Netflix.
Watching.
Yeah, binge watching.
People like binge watching.
And
now.
The key phrase, what you said, the key word is they're slowly.
Yes.
Very slowly catching
up.
But,
and you look at The Sopranos and Mad Men and Breaking Bad, they've been around for a while.
Yep.
Like, wake up, guys.
Wake up.
This is what people
even
watch.
Genre programming. You look like anything from The Strain or any of these this horror programming, like Walking Dead has been, it's been around for years. Now the networks try to catch up. I'm like, oh no, we'll make some horror programming in here and there.
But let's talk about this now. You were on the last, two seasons of Mad Men.
Right.
Which is this iconic show. We'll try not to give any spoilers of the Mad Men series finale.
Yeah. We don't have to.
We don't have to.
Because a lot of people haven't seen it.
Haven't seen it yet.
I haven't seen it yet.
I'll just say this. I loved it. But so now you got to kind of see, you're involved in this show. That's like the things we're talking about. Is John Hamm going to want to keep working? I mean, I'm sure he is. I mean, but like all these things that have happened that have working with Robert Morse and seeing that.
And Harry Hamlin, I got to work with him. I was a fan of his from L.A. Law.
Right. He was so different in Mad Men than he's ever been.
Yeah. And he got nominated for an Emmy his first year on the show.
He was so great.
Yeah.
I mean.
Great character.
Great character.
Now, do you think you might be privy to this or possibly not? Do you think there might be a spinoff like they're doing with the other shows?
Nope.
Like Breaking Bad and Walking Dead? They're trying to keep kind of the franchise going?
I've heard nothing. I don't think it's going to happen. Mm. I think Matt Weiner is going to move on to other things.
Right.
Who knows, though? Mm-hmm. But I highly doubt it. And something like Saul, Better Call Saul, is like a prequel. We're focusing on this one character. And I love that show. Mm-hmm. That was great. Boy, talk about it. It's great to see a television show take its time.
Right.
And Better Call Saul, they really take their time with the scenes, setting it up, which is a dream, I think, for writers and actors.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not the crew.
Yeah.
So what is it?
They're getting overtime.
So now, shooting this show, you're in the second to last episode or third to last episode?
Fourth to last. So there was two episodes before me, and then I did two. This is in the 7B, and then the last three episodes. So the first two and the last three, I had no idea what was happening.
Right.
If you're not in the episode, if you're not at the table read, you have no idea.
Right.
So you just found out about the series finale like everybody else.
Absolutely. And that's the way I wanted to because I started out as a fan.
Right.
For five and a half seasons.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been watching the Mad Men since day one, episode one. So it was fun to be a fan again,
And what was it like then? Did you get to go to the big...
I went to the parties.
Yeah.
They invited me to the Emmys last year, which they didn't have to.
Right.
I wasn't nominated, but I was part, a character in the show, so they invited me. Very generous. I've been to, most of the parties. I kind of forget sometimes you're not You're not a core member.
Right.
You're just this guest star, but I'm so involved emotionally in it that I'm happy for anybody that gets on the show. In The Last Mad Men, I won't give a spoiler alert, there's a woman in bed with Don Draper. Go figure. And and I'm sitting there watching him. I was so happy for the actress. Because not only did she get on The Last Mad Men, she got to go to bed. I'm really happy for her because her friends are seeing her for the first time.
Right.
You know, because you can't tell anybody.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as I said, so many of her actress friends are going to be happy and jealous.
Right.
You know. But I was, you know, and that's what I thought about the last episode. Like, a lot of actors we hadn't seen before had some really juicy parts.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so it was, I was very happy. I know exactly how they feel.
Right.
You know? Especially the last episode.
And how has this been for you, just like career-wise?
Open a huge door. You know,
oh, that's
I still
great.
Have to audition, but I'm auditioning for better stuff. I've had three different projects come from this. And the really first burst was Louis, getting on Louis.
Oh, really?
And I think that, the Mad Men.
That was a good Louis episode that you were on.
And so that helped me with exposure. So when I walked into an audition for Mad Men, they had seen me, you know.
Mm.
You know, and they said, oh. And but I wasn't well known.
Right.
And that's another thing, you know, so. Mm.
I mean, you've been on many, many shows too. Like you were on a couple Fox shows too. I mean, it's not like this was your first role.
No, it wasn't. But you know, usually when you get older, I was 59, 58 when I was first cast in Mad Men. I'm 60 now.
Mm-hmm.
I still got stuff coming out, so it's really given my acting career a real burst. Mm-hmm. You know, which
that's great.
It doesn't really happen.
Right.
At the age of 58, you know. And I was talking to Robert Morris. We're talking about him. He was in his 70s when he got Mad Men. And now he's part of an iconic show. Now, we could have never seen Robert Morris again. He still had a good career.
Right.
This is makes it even better.
Well, the cool thing about this is it kind of goes back to what we're talking about. Like, if you haven't seen it, it's new to you. I didn't really know who he was. I was like, I know, I think I've probably seen him in something. But now I want to go back and watch all these things he was in.
Guide for the Married Man. A lot of fun.
Right.
He was great in that. I saw that when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. Like, kid, I said 12,
well, William
13.
Devane, you know, he got a resurgence on that show, 24. He was in a bunch of episodes, and you realize, oh, no, he's got quite a resume.
Oh, William Devane, he's great in that. And the Mel Gibson movie Payback, where he's the mob guy. He's like, let me know about this other mutt. He's either, what do you refer to Mel Gibson?
He's also in Marathon.
Yeah, Marathon, man. He did a made-for-TV movie back in the 70s about the Kennedys.
Mm.
And I think he played John or Bobby.
Right.
And that's the first time I saw the guy.
Mm-hmm.
He was up for Sam Malone on Cheers.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So
that's so crazy. So what are some of the other, like...
Here's a movie I saw I didn't like.
Okay.
But I wanted to see it. It was up against Lenny Bruce. Lenny.
The Dustin Hoffman, which is a great movie.
Yeah, but I had seen it on the big screen when I was a kid in college.
Mm-hmm.
And this was The Proud Rebel with Alan Ladd, Olivia De Havilland, directed by Michael Curtiz. Really lame.
Right. Really?
Really flat. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it wasn't a good film at all. But Alan Ladd's son, David Ladd, played his actual son in the movie.
Oh, wow.
So he came out and gave a talk about his perspective of, you know, being an actor in his film. So I found that interesting.
Oh, cool.
I would say this real quick. Anybody, the movie Lenny that came out in 1974, directed by Bob Fosse, starring Dustin Hoffman playing Lenny Bruce, this movie's worth seeing because if you want to know who Lenny Bruce was...
It's a good intro to him.
It's a really good intro into who he was. And I think it's in that classic era of Dustin Hoffman movies.
Right, right.
Like this, Straight Time... obviously Marathon Man, Midnight Cowboy. This is that era where Dustin Hoffman was just each movie he was playing a completely different person and doing an amazing job of it. And Lenny, especially if you're a young comic or just a comic, you need to watch this.
Yeah, it's good.
Right.
And in an interview after the movie was done, Cliff Gorman played the part on Broadway.
Mm-hmm.
And Dustin Hoffman said, I think Cliff Gorman would have done a better job. Or he would have been better in this movie. And that was an interesting thing.
Right.
I remember I read that. I think it was a Playboy interview because I devoured Playboy interviews.
Right. Well, those interviews were great.
Yeah. Listen, the pictures are great, but I also read the articles. I mean, people, you know, women especially dismiss Playboy as this like superficial,
sure,
you know, womanizing kind of magazine. Great interviews,
right,
in Playboy. Michael Douglas talked about how Carl Malden helped him on Streets of San Francisco.
That's in Malden's book too. It's great. Malden worked with his dad, Kirk Douglas, and when he came into audition, he looked at his chin and he's like, "Who's your dad?" Because I know this chin. He goes, mm-hmm. He's like, "Yeah, I thought so." But yeah, he talked about how he said, and Malden's book is great. He goes, "Let me help you, kid, and I'll show you. I'll help you be famous." Right?
Then Michael, is that what he said? I'll help you be famous.
He goes, "I'm gonna show you what to do." And he was like, "You got it."
Yeah.
So then Michael Douglas, you know, leaves the show because he gets big enough, and they bring in Robert Hatch or whatever, one of those, and Michael
Carl Malden
said the same thing. "Look, kid, follow me. We've been doing the show at that point 6-7 years or whatever."
Right,
he
right.
goes, "Let me show you." Famous.
Maybe he didn't want anybody there for very long.
And what was Hatch's response?
Hatch was like, "Oh, I've already gotten I've been on a soap opera and I got the most fan mail of anybody, so I got this figured out." And Carl Malden writes in his book, "That's when I knew the show was done."
"I got more fan mail."
Yeah.
It's amazing how, like, well, anybody, any artist can really have their head up their ass.
Yeah.
And not look at it as a new opportunity.
Carl Malden is telling you, follow me.
Yeah. I'll help you.
And you're like, "Nah, I got it." And the great thing too is, Malden, he's some Eastern European background, so his real name is like Malden Sekulovich,
right,
or something like that. So the move Sekulovich is in that show constantly. They're like, "Sergeant Sekulovich, get over here!" Like, they put his name,
the rest of his last name,
his actual name,
Sekulovich Bakery.
Let's yeah, I know, but they do that stuff all the time. It's hilarious. It's a great book to read. When do I start? Or I think is what it's called.
Carl Malden's
book.
Right,
great book.
All right, you want to talk about some DVDs?
Let's do it.
American Sniper coming out. Now we talked a lot about this film, and we also did a spoiler up. You can definitely reference that. It is definitely worth your time. It's a really good film.
You know what I'd like to hear, guys? If you haven't seen American Sniper and you have an inclination to watch it, I'd like you to watch it and listen to our spoiler up, and then email us and tell us what your thoughts on it are, because it was obviously this thing that split a lot of people and it became
and
a big political.
If you haven't seen it, watch it without any preconceived notions.
Good luck with that.
Yeah, no political note. There's just nothing. Just
but try
watch
to just
it.
Watch it as a film and tell us what you think of it as a film. I'd love to hear what you guys have to say on that.
The next movie on DVD is Strange Magic. This was the George Lucas animated film that, if you want some entertaining reads, read the reviews on IMDb. People are absolutely furious about this movie and are taking it very personally. Apparently, it's not a good film, not even a good film for children. And there's many people that are just very enraged by it on IMDb, so you can check that out. I was laughing out loud.
Amazing how movies, people take it personally.
Yes.
You know, because that's the power of film, though. It's not necessarily that these people don't have a life.
Right.
It's because you're investing in time, movies mean a lot to you, and when you see something that insults you,
right,
because it's so bad,
you take it personally.
Yeah.
In fact,
the same way, if you see a movie that empowers you,
right.
or it makes you wonder about life.
One of my favorite ones was, it was a father who had taken his kid, this is their first animated movie, and he was furious that this ended up being her first animated movie that he took his kids.
Yeah, this kid will have this memory for the rest of his life. I'm damaged. There's a therapist out there going to make some money because of George Lucas.
Well, I think that's a good point, though. It kind of ties into the whole TCM thing. You can download it, watch it at home or whatever, but going to a theater is an experience. It takes effort. It takes money. It takes time. So like,
especially when you get older, then it's babysitters and, you know, you go out to dinner usually,
right,
and it's an evening out.
It's an evening out.
And it's hard when you have an HD TV right there in your house.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, but there
surround
is that ritual.
Sound.
There is that ritual. Mm-hmm. And so when you go, so when it is good and it empowers you or motivates you or whatever, it's awesome. And then when it's bad, it's like, God damn it. Like, I spent all this time and money, and these guys spent however many millions of dollars to make this, and this is what they fucking did. Like, it does bring out the emotion in it.
Calm down.
I know, fucking God damn it.
I saw the Jean-Luc Godard film. Mm-hmm. One with my father-in-law, who was a big fan of his from way back, and it was garbage.
Right.
It was.
His latest one?
Yeah. It was only an hour and 10 minutes, but it saw it at the Arrow in Santa Monica. It was just an old guy jerking off.
Was that the one in 3D?
Yes.
Oh.
No reason to be in 3D. The glasses made it even more cumbersome.
You have a headache now.
It was horrible. And people coming out, oh, I thought it was, you stop.
You're just saying that. Yeah. You're just saying because you think you should.
It was a waste of time.
All right.
Hot Tub Time Machine 2, and I will say I loved the first one. I thought it hit that great sweet spot of nostalgia and
parody
and humor and... that being said, I had no desire to see the sequel at all. I'm like, well, no, I already saw what you were trying to do. I'm done. I don't need I don't need a weak attempt at trying to recapture it that will never work.
This is on an international flight where I've got 12 hours to kill.
And no John Cusack either.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe we'll watch it, but I can't. I feel the same way. Like, the first one was great. I don't want to ruin it.
You know why John Cusack didn't do it?
Don't know.
He got more fan mail than any of the other actors.
Delivered. Handwritten fan mail.
There were some things on Twitter where he was saying, oh, they never asked me. I'm like,
That's
bullshit. I find that hard to believe. They would never ask that you didn't get asked to be in that movie. Premiering this week, Tomorrowland.
Oh, I'm excited to see this.
I got to say, I'm really excited to see it. I already have tickets. The whole family is going. We're going Sunday. And we got the El Capitan tickets. So you get like the old-time Hollywood. You get the organ player. You get a magic show. And you get the movie.
That'll be great.
It's going to be great. It's an evening. It's an afternoon out. And I'm so looking forward to this for a couple of reasons. First of all, love George Clooney. Love the concept, and Brad Bird's directing it, Iron Giant and The Incredibles. So I'm really, this looks like that great golden age of Disney-type movies of like Treasure Island and those, that they're not kids' films, they're family films that we can all go and enjoy together.
That's so great when you have a family. And I'm telling you, I don't have kids, so I'm going to stay home and watch hockey.
Yeah.
And I'll see Tomorrowland tomorrow.
Yeah,
that's
you go.
When I'll see it. I don't need the organ. I don't need the magic. I don't need a bunch of little kids going, "Mommy, I don't get it."
You want to watch guys on skates fight?
Yes.
And I will say, you're going to save a lot of money.
Always expensive. Yeah. But see, you know, that's the amazing thing. Living in L.A. with the Turner Classic Movie Festival, the old movies at the Arrow, Tomorrowland with an organist and a whole show.
Yeah.
This is why, one of the reasons why we live here, to bear witness to this.
It's the great, when I first moved here almost 20 years ago, I fell in love because they're just like, oh, we're re-releasing Apocalypse Now and Godfather. I saw all these movies on the big screen for the first time. I was like, holy shit, this is awesome. And that's... I want comedy filmers to get big enough that we can buy an old theater, fix it up, and show classic movies in there. That's what I want.
But don't do it here. Do it in the heartland. Yeah, your fans can at least
we'll
get
do it
on
all
a bus.
Over the country. That's what I want to just
with we'll a tent. A we'll have a tent. We'll have an organ. We'll do some magic tricks.
No, Graham it's will not come some out and hobo do a gypsy parade. It's
Graham will read from the Carl Malden autobiography.
But to be fair, we do have plans for a hobo gypsy parade.
No, that's a separate issue. That's a separate festival, and it's a separate ticketed event.
Oh. Hey, how long have you guys been doing this?
Comedy Film Nerds as a website has been since 2008, so you've been writing for us since 2008.
Podcast
since December of 2009.
Let me say this. Congratulations,
guys. Thanks, dude.
I remember when you started this and, you know, out of a shoebox, you know, whatever it was. Hey, do you want to do this? But that it's grown to this, I salute you.
Thank you, man.
Props. It's great.
Alan, we're happy to have you a part of it.
And thank you for having me on.
You've been a part of this and, you know, you've been on this. You helped write, you wrote chapters in the book. You've written articles and columns for us. You helped us out on day one, and we couldn't have done it without guys like you.
And the money I've made from this.
It's amazing.
I don't have to act.
The residuals alone.
Mad Men was just a hobby.
Yeah, it was.
We just, okay. Now I have my comedy. Listen, we know you have the comedy film nerd money.
We just send the CFN chopper to pick you up and fly you up to the valley.
It's beautiful.
We record on a yacht.
Now that we're swimming in cash.
By the way, the pilot chopper doesn't understand the shortest distance straight line thing.
It's
all the freeway. Yeah. So.
We'll work on that. We'll iron that out.
Oh, by the way, have you seen Locke?
Love Locke. Getting back to Tom Hardy?
Yes.
Yeah, I haven't seen it yet.
My favorite movie of last year.
Oh, for sure.
Cool.
and it wasn't nominated, it wasn't on top 10 list.
Didn't get anybody's real attention, but it should have.
Yeah, it was unbelievable.
Locke was one of those films. And
Locke, put an E on the end of Locke. And I just had to talk about that. And Wild Things, too.
Which is yes. Now, you said Wild Tales, right?
Wild Tales.
Wild Tales.
Yes, thank you.
And we want to. And also, you made it a point, too, to make sure you don't find anything about this movie before you see it.
Absolutely
check out Wild
that
Tales.
That goes for any movie.
Yeah.
Unless you're bringing your kid, you know, and it's subject it matter.
Right.
Or you're going on a date, you
right.
know. Locke is not a date movie.
No, it's not a date movie at all.
So, Bad Lieutenant, not a date movie.
Yeah.
A mistake I made. I got a screening. This is in the 90s. Hey, you invited a screening. I took a date. Whoa.
Yeah.
Bad movie. But she stayed with me for a couple.
Good for you.
Yeah.
Way to go.
That's the Have overcomes that.
The Have. Yeah. That's that sweet Havey charm.
Yeah. After that, you took her to Blue Velvet to really try to see if she would stay.
Try to get her to rebound from that.
So now also premiering this week is Poltergeist.
Oh.
And I got to say, I watched the trailer, and it made me even more baffled as to why this remake exists or why somebody even bought
this it. This is why I would like to buy a theater, fix it up, and show this is what we would do. If we owned any theaters right now, this weekend where they're re-releasing this, or not re-releasing, remade Poltergeist, we would show the original one that's fucking awesome.
Yes.
This is the dumbest thing
I've ever. Who did this?
Oh God! I don't know.
Who directed it? Was this a criminal? Well, no, it came from Spielberg, right?
Well, no, it's because he did the original. He gets a credit on the remake, but I don't think he had much to do with it.
Well, who is this? Bob and Stan in Wichita?
Gil Keenan.
Okay, all right.
Ooh, Gil Keenan, of course.
You know, Spielberg now will put his name on anything.
Yeah,
don't you feel though that teenagers today would prefer a Poltergeist with a lot more whammies? You know, that they couldn't...
Maybe.
They become impatient watching...
Well, then make a new movie that has more scares and more things teenagers like. Why remake a movie and just shoehorn all these things in?
I agree, but still.
I get that, yeah.
There's a whole market out there.
But this guy directed City of Ember and Monster House. Like, I just don't know why...
Maybe those were good. I don't know.
Sure, they were great.
And also coming out for counter programming when you're not going to see Poltergeist is When Marnie Was There. Now, this is an animated film from Studio Ghibli. It's going to be in very limited release, and it's unfortunately, it sounds like it's going to be their last animated feature for a long time. And I was watching the trailer, and what I love about their films now, they don't make kids' movies, they don't really necessarily make adult movies, they make movies for them. It's like when Warner Brothers would make the Bugs Bunny shorts. It's like, we made them for us.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, they do these on just this grand scale, and it's another coming-of-age movie about two girls and the friendship. It's a little vague in the trailer what it's actually about, but it looks... great. I mean, I'm a big fan of all their movies, and I love when one comes out, and I'm a little kind of melancholy that this may be the last one, but if you can find it, if it's near you, if it's on demand, check it out, When Marnie Was There.
All right. Let's go into some site spotlight and fan feedback.
CJ and Neil both have dueling Mad Max reviews, although they're not really dueling, they both thoroughly enjoyed it. And I will say that CJ's review, especially him being Australian, is pretty much spot on. I really I agreed with everything he said in the review.
Fan feedback. We had a nice posting May 14th. What was the last horrible bad movie you saw?
There's some great posts
because they talk a lot about from the podcast. How did this get made? So Quincy Brown said I watched The Room last week, which is this sort of classic bad movie
cult following.
Yeah. Someone said Divergent. Three Severity said Divergent. What was the other one we just saw? Oh, Chase Gregory, you are brave for watching the 1996 Island of Dr. Moreau. That is, we were talking about Brando. That's one of those, what happened?
Yeah, how did that, yeah.
Is this just paying for court fees for something? Like,
or like, well, you know, he gave away the rights to The Godfather. You know about that story?
No.
Robert Evans talks about it in The Kid Stays in the Picture. Mm-hmm. Great showbiz book.
Right.
Brando was having
tax... And also great documentary.
Yes. Brando was having tax problems, and he sold his rights to Paramount for like $150,000, $175,000. It would have been worth millions.
Oh.
Yeah. So Brando needed the money.
And that was one of those movies, too, that looked like every scene was directed by a different director. Like, it looked like this weird mishmash of, like, well, whose turn is it on set to direct today? You know, like, everyone on the crew took a turn for the day. That movie is a complete mess, but it's one of those movies, too, that...
Mike's in traffic.
Yeah. All right.
Grab the reins.
Get the script girl.
I don't go to show the rest, just throw the cameras, please.
It really is a train wreck, so it's worth watching just for that reason.
All right, yeah. Alistair Lagone recently saw Dune. It was terrible. So much random narrated exposition. That's so fucking awesome.
And accurate.
So on the money. Oh my God. Michelle Burchard Toth, Space Station 76. To be honest, I only made it about halfway through. I couldn't take another minute. My head hurts just thinking about it. These are awesome, you guys. And we love when you post your opinions on this on the Facebook fan page. And yeah, like the Facebook fan page. That's a great thing. So that's our episode.
And stay tuned for the spoiler app dropping soon.
Oh, Mad Max spoiler app. Alan Havey, thank you so much for being on the show. What do you got coming up? Where can people find
you on the
internet?
What can you talk about? I know you're on an NDA for
I have three projects coming out, but I can't talk about them.
Nice.
People see them or they won't. But I'll talk about them after I do them. Right here. Only here. This is where I spill all the secrets. Now, let me tell you something about John Hamm, who plays Don Draper. Mm-hmm. 30 pounds overweight, mostly bald. Cute overbite and a lisp, but they put a special lens on the camera and makes them that handsome. And I said, could I get the Hamm lens? They go, no. And they put it in the box and they wheel it away.
Yeah, it's in a gold sealed box.
Real pleasure to be here, guys. And thanks for getting me into the Classic Film Festival.
Amen.
Absolutely.
Thanks for going every year.
If you don't watch Turner Classic Movies, you are not a comedy film nerd.
No, you're not.
You're just not.
Any upcoming stand-up dates?
Yes, I'm going to be in Las Vegas in third week of June.
Okay.
I'll be at the Comedy Cellar in New York June 12th through the 15th. And go to alanhavey.com.
You're not under NDA for those dates?
No, I'm not. I can't even talk about this podcast. Your gardener, when I was walking in, said, what are you doing here? I said, can't talk about it.
Yeah.
Sorry. And, I'll be at a comedy club. But watch Locke and watch the Oscar. If you want to watch a bad movie, really turkey of a film.
That's the Stallone one.
No. Which is the Oscar. Look it up.
Oh, God.
It's really hard to find, but I guarantee you will laugh hysterically when you watch the Oscar.
The Oscar.
Yeah.
All right. Another great recommendation.
All right.
Yeah.
Oh, 1966.
Yes.
The Oscar, 1966. Ooh, directed by Russell Rouse. Oh, a snotty Hollywood actor becomes even more full of himself after he's nominated for Best Actor at the Academy Awards.
Yeah, perfect.
This is going to be gorgeous. all right, Dr. Havey, thank you so much for being on the show.
My pleasure, guys.
Guys, if you haven't watched the last season of Mad Men, watch it for Alan Havey and many other reasons.
Watch it on Netflix. I get a nickel every time you watch it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so...
Stream it. Binge
it. Out of the Streets of San Francisco. Remake.
all right, guys. I will be headlining the Comedy Corner Underground in Minneapolis June 19th and 20th. Check that out. That's on my website. And also will be also headlining the Improv at Harrah's in Las Vegas the end of July. That date is July 14th through the 19th. Check that out. And can we talk about this?
I'll be there the week before.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Awesome.
Yep. Podcast Movement. Well, Graham and I will be there,
in Dallas.
And we will be there, it looks like we might be doing a show, but we'll definitely be doing panels. Mm-hmm. The show isn't confirmed yet, but the panels are definitely.
It's July 31st and August 1st.
And August 1st. Yes.
And also we'll be at Comic-Con.
Yeah. And we'll definitely be at Comic-Con. We can't announce which panel it is, but you probably have a pretty good idea.
Take a guess.
Yeah.
I'm sitting with a couple of players.
That's right, friend. Get in your CFN helicopter.
Yeah. If there's a free panel, we'll be there.
So check that out. And of course, Los Angeles Podcast Festival, September 18th through the 20th.
Yes.
Going to be announcing some big stuff pretty soon with that. We're just finalizing the deals on that and some other shows. So,
and also, we did finalize Thrilling Adventure Hour. They will be there. And also, Starting in June, we will be starting to sell some Thrilling Adventure Hour merchandise.
Yes.
Not yet, but in a couple of weeks.
Hi. All right, guys, that's everything that we got going on. As we've talked about, thank you for supporting the show. Many of you have been listening all these years. Anyone who's new, thank you so much. All the great things you can do to help the show out for free. Positive reviews on iTunes helps.
Yep.
Liking us on any of the social media platforms. Those numbers actually matter. So we appreciate all of your guys' support.
Yes. Yelling out focus. Yeah. In a theater? Yeah. That'll help.
That helps. Yelling out focus. Can't hear you. Yelling out that.
And
not
and
talking at a comedy club. Those
that
things
helps
help.
Too, sure.
Or at the movies.
Yes. Yeah. Anything else?
Well, I will say now that we're talking about it, because when I saw Mad Max, this infuriated me. The person next to me was eating home food for an hour through the film and had the most... I don't know what she had wrapped it in, but it sounded like wax paper attached to a microphone. And it's like, you know, if you're going to bring food from home, I get it. It's expensive to eat at the theater food, but wrap it properly so it's not loud for an hour next to the people next to you.
It's communal empathy. Thank you.
All right, guys, that's our episode. Thank you again, Alan Havey, for being on the show. Episode 269, put it in the books. My name is Graham Elwood.
And I'm Chris Mancini. And as always, remember,
Han shot first. Unless you're Don Draper.